Thanks for listening to the Military to Civilian Career Transition Power Hour. 1 hour of tips from experts and real stories from people just like you. For those thinking about what lies ahead, for those going through the job search, and those who have paved the way to their next career after the military. These professionals are dedicated to helping you move forward successfully to the next phase of your career after the military. Welcome to Exchange.
Hello and welcome. It is the Military to Civilian Career Transition Power Hour. My name is Cheryl Cross. I have with me a gentleman who's currently sitting in Okinawa. He is just a few months away from his transition out of 21 years serving the U.S. Marine Corps, and his name is Atticus Brooks. Hi, Atticus. Thanks so much for joining us at 3 o'clock in the morning your time. I appreciate your tenacity.
Thank you for having me.
When I reached out to you, I found you through LinkedIn. You were sharing a bit about your transition and what you hope to do. I also noticed that you are a SkillBridge intern, and you shared with me that you are also finishing a bachelor's degree. Your plate is incredibly full. How are you handling all this?
One word, Jesus.
You're praying a lot.
Praying a lot. And just remember that I'm not the only person going through this situation. Maybe the only person in my own way in this particular aspect, but I'm not the only one going through this. So that's that.
What resources are you utilizing other than Jesus, God, and the Holy Ghost, and maybe some friends or people on base? What are you doing to keep your head above water on this?
So I'm connected through American Corporate Partners. Of course, my SkillBridge Legion Vets, just random people here and there on LinkedIn, and just continue to hear from my wife and random people on social media, and just using the time that I have away from my old unit, like just taking full advantage of that, to slow down and really take things one day at a time.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about your SkillBridge program.
So as I just said, I'm with Legion Vets. They've had different tracks, different programs. I picked digital marketing because I felt that it was closely niched to my own pursuit of graphic arts. And just what happened within that program, they have a UX design. I just got my certificate from Google Professional Design for UX.
Congrats.
I still have to wrap up my certificates for digital marketing. And when it's all said and done, I'll be pursuing a career in either one of those two avenues, whether it be graphics or digital marketing.
So is this something you came into with knowledge, or was this brand new, brand spanking new for you?
It was kind of brand new. My background in Marine Corps is a communication strategy and operations. That's pretty much a long name. If I were to condense it, you had two job fields within the Marine Corps. It was combat camera and public affairs that was put together. I come from the combat camera side as a photographer and graphic artist. Throughout my time, I've gained some knowledge of public affairs. So, you know, I feel like all that just ties in to the digital marketing aspect, because within public affairs, you're doing some type of marketing.
Mm-hmm. So Allegiant Vets has set you up with this internship SkillBridge program. Are you learning anything you didn't know before? And do you think this will serve you in getting a job?
Short answer, yes. I wasn't fully aware of the marketing piece, let alone digital marketing. And just within this last week, I started diving into the social media marketing. I've done some type of social media management with a couple of my old units, but just to knowing that you have to do scheduling, coming up with ideas, like really getting to those nitty-gritty details, that was brand new to me.
Yes, when you're working for a company that has product launches, it becomes very complicated. That's why social media schedulers are so important. But you become one, right? And you can kind of do it lightweight on LinkedIn. You can schedule a post. You can schedule your post ahead of time. But when you have to do that for four platforms, five platforms, 10 platforms. It becomes quite laborious. So good luck with that. In your SkillBridge program, are you working with civilian-based companies, or how does that work?
So within the program, you're going through a thing called Coursera. So you're learning classes in that program. And LegionVest does have opportunity where you can actually sit side by side with them and get the experience. I haven't jumped into that just yet, but I plan on doing so with about a month and a half left.
All right.
And if I
I'll be on the hunt.
Get into that specifically, you know, I am still learning through those courses and just doing my own little research.
Have you changed directions since starting your SkillBridge, SkillBridge program?
No, I haven't. I stayed the course. I know that people do change, but I'm a believer in if you start something, you better finish it. It's kind of bad to have a track record of just starting and not finishing, starting and not finishing. And to kind of go deep into a rabbit hole, not just with Coursera, but life in general. Since I've been in, I've been going through school. I had to take a break from school for like 9-10 years. And once I got here to Okinawa, and I knew that I had the time to finish, I said, okay, this is the time. Let's get it knocked out. And it just so happened that me doing my degree, it lines up with me heading out the door. Like I'm getting my degree literally 1 month before my EAS.
Wow. And that's just in a few months. So you're going to be going back to the U.S. mainland from Okinawa. You've decided on a place. You've done some good research. I'm very proud of you. A lot of people don't quite know what they want to do. How did you come to the decisions of where you wanted to be between you and your family members?
Me being from Baltimore and my wife being from South Carolina and us establishing our family in North Carolina, we figured we wanted to be somewhere in the middle. On top of that, we spent more time around her side of family than my side. It's just the nature of the duty stations and whatnot. With this opportunity, we get to be closer to my side, but still in a good position for her family as well. For what I wanted to do, it would be more job opportunities, which is a good thing and kind of bad at the same time, especially when you're applying and you get denied so many times, or they say, hey, you're a good fit, but it's too early.
Timing is key when you're coming out of the military. You're learning that. I created a frame for LinkedIn because people were putting their open to work very early in their transition. So I created one that kind of gives their date. You can find it on the website at xchangepodcast.com. But I brought up a point to LinkedIn, and I don't think that they really had thought much about the small, though they call it a small community. You're not a small community. 200,000 people a year leave the military and go into the U.S. job force. So for those 200,000 people who are putting their open to work banners on early, it can be quite confusing to the recruiters and quite frustrating. And I think that leads to a lot of bias, especially for folks who are recruiting and aren't really kind of understanding of your proclivities, let's say, that you might not be able to put that open to work banner at the right time because maybe you're getting the wrong information, you know, or you're eager, right? Well, I'm ready to start searching for a job. I got to get out of here. Well, we can't quite hire you yet. So understanding those timelines is one of the impetuses for me to do not only this podcast, but write my book, which is called Civilian Mission. As a Marine, I understand the saying is once a Marine, always a Marine. Do you intend on continuing the mission in some way when you go back to the U.S. mainland?
I'm open to any opportunity, whether it be on base or off base. So it's a matter of air and opportunity.
All right. If you could have, let's see, for those of you listening, you can't see it, but I'm holding up a chopstick. And then, of course, in Hawaii and in Okinawa, you probably have chopsticks all over the place. So this is your magic wand, Atticus. I'm going to hand you this proverbial magic wand, and I'm going to give you the magic wand. And if you could create the perfect job that this time next year, if you and I touch base in your first year of employment, what is that going to be?
So perfect job would be me in a firm where I can utilize my graphic skills, whether I'm actually doing graphic stuff or leading or managing a team of designers. If we would discuss pay, that's neither here nor there, but if we discuss pay, probably between 70 and 100,000, that might not seem like a lot to others, but based on my current pay and the environment, that's good enough for me. You know, 40 hours, you know, 5-day week job, weekend with the family, or they got a position where it's, you know, every other Friday off, that type of deal.
Well, I'm so proud of you for actually envisioning what your work week will look like. You seem pretty clear on what you want on your salary. I'm going to ask you to pull that $70,000 to $100,000 range together. I tell people, try and stick within $10,000 range. So I'd love to hear you say between 90 and 100. Don't go lower. Mm-hmm. You probably will never say this, but for the listening audience who is potentially, you know, contemplating leaving the military, it's okay to be open. Your TAPS instructor is going to say be open, but having a $30,000 range is a bit much. Try and bringing in to 10 and be flexible. When you tell people, I'm totally open, I'll take whatever you get, you're going to get whatever they have. I try and make this podcast timeless. At this point that we're recording it, we're heading into a fairly big recession. There's a lot of people in the creative spaces being laid off. So speak to that. Are you keeping a finger on the pulse of what's going on within the creative spaces? A lot of people that are working for games, gaming industry, even the big computer companies are laying off people, and a lot of them are the creative staff. So talk to me a little bit about your thoughts on that. Have you done some research?
I've heard some things here and there about, you know, layoffs and whatnot. And I think that's why I kind of stuck with the digital marketing piece. I think if I were to go into a different route, it might be actually public affairs or anything with finance. And I based that decision off of handling traveling fees for the military. So anytime anybody's going to go to this place or that place and they gotta run the funds of, you know, how much it's gonna cost or even get approved for traveling, I was that guy. Mm-hmm. So approving funds, kind of budgeting, that could be another avenue.
Yeah, there you go. So you have a plan B. I like that. While you're building your independent business on Fiverr and Upwork to let everybody know that you're available, I highly suggest. So when I was creating my book and creating my podcast Collateral, I looked for people who were veterans. And I got to tell you, not a lot of people say that they're veterans on Fiverr and Upwork. And I found them. It took me some research. But I highly recommend that you use that if you're comfortable. And of course, you do this on your LinkedIn. Your LinkedIn is quite nice. I want to ask a couple questions because, you know, public affairs is such a huge, vast industry. And people coming out of public affairs. I interviewed Teresa Carpenter. She is a Navy working with NATO public affairs officer. She is over in the UK right now. She'll be heading to the mainland at some point and hopefully running for office. But wink, wink, nod, nod. I don't know if we can talk her into that. But, you know, there's so many opportunities, right? No pressure. There's so many opportunities for folks like you who have sat even in the protocol office. But public affairs, I think, is, you know, you really are the expert coordinators for branches of the military and divisions within those branches. What has public affairs communications taught you over the last however many years you've been seated in that MOS?
I kind of gained some public affairs experience towards the end because my background's been the documentarian side. You know, just to engage with other folks, trying to get people access onto the location, or you just get to talk to you. It's a daunting task, but I realized that it is honorable towards the end of the day. It's an interesting piece to get someone else's perspective from different from yours. And if you can, like, bridge any gaps, eliminate any biases, then you're good to go. You have to be mindful of the wrong word getting put out there, or the judgment. So you always gotta be on watch and be on standby to either adjust or correct the narrative, if you will. Just got to be mindful of that.
You bring up a good point. In some of the media training that I've done, not only personally as a broadcaster, but with clients, I always teach them how to answer a question if they're ever asked. Sometimes they might not. When I was in Los Angeles, I had a client. I was running his communications campaign. He was a doctor. And I got this big deal news agency to do a spot on him. He had aligned with, you know, another company and had this great test that was out. And one of the key anchors, I can't remember her name, but she was a big deal, won a lot of awards. And I was nervous. So we did the segment. And of course, I was terrified. The doctor was terrified, my client. And she walked me, I walked her out to her van because they had a 900 other things to do. And she said to me, "You have to teach him how to talk in sound bites." And now I know that just means you don't want to edit anything. But what it taught me also was to have people have ready answers. And a lot of what you do in public affairs, or I'm sure the military just does this, answering the question in a different way, talking to the solution, talking to the problem, explaining the solution and the course of action.
The thing that popped in my mind was talking points. In Marine Corps, well, in the military in general, we're good with talking points, getting you prepared for what needs to be said. So yes, you're being your authentic self, but you have to be censored so you don't put out the wrong word, put out the wrong image.
If you had a dream company that you could represent as a digital marketing, communications, or public affairs professional, what type of industry would that be?
I honestly don't know. I don't know, but there are a few companies that, you know, I am interested in that I've either going to put applications in or I just keep looking them up. Like, believe I'm interested in Amazon. I thought about Yahoo not too long ago because no one talks about Yahoo anymore. It's always Amazon or Google.
Right. The big ones. And yeah, they're experiencing, I mean, again, this is a timeless recording, but, you know, as we're recording this now, they are going through severe layoffs. And again, those creative staff are getting hit. Now, if you look at Fiverr and Upwork, it's a lot of talent that doesn't live in the U.S. if you're coming from the U.S. Mm-hmm. It's people in other countries that will take jobs for a fraction of the cost, which is appealing to some content creators. Mm-hmm. Have you looked into that as an opportunity if you were to, say, hang your own shingle out there?
I haven't, but you know, just hearing what you say, that's something worth looking into.
Well, I think we have some checking in with you as you do your first year. I'm curious. I'm going to be watching you as you move from, you know, your SkillBridge program, finish your bachelor's degree, leaving Okinawa, the beautiful Indo-Pacific, where I also live, and working with a fine branch of the service, the U.S. Marine Corps. So once a Marine, always a Marine. I hope that you continue to do something within the service branch and take those values that you have learned over the last 21 years into whatever role. I hope you proudly call yourself a veteran as you transfer into the civilian workforce and that you continue to teach and train people who don't know about your skills and your capabilities. And of course, if there's ever any upset or stumble, or if you need new direction, that you look at all the VSOs, the Veteran Service Organizations. It looks like Allegiant Vets will be having a hand on you for a while, but that you look at American Corporate Partners, Veterati, all the other ones that are also serving and trying to put people like you to work, because a lot of you are coming out of the workforce. Like I said, 200,000 people leave the workforce. A good 70%, up to 70% sometimes, some years, are leaving their first job within the first year. They haven't chosen well, I think, or they just can choose. I don't know. It's two sides of that coin, right? Finally get out of the military after X number of years and didn't have a lot of choices. Now you can choose and it's like, I can quit. So they quit. So there's freedom and flexibility, but there's also a really weird job market. So I'm super curious to see where you go. I always ask this before. Well, first, we got to spell your name because it is very unusual and creative. Somebody will probably want to reach out to you either to ask you about employment or ask you about your journey. So let's pause for a second and have you spell your name and tell people how they can get a hold of you.
Okay. So my first name is Atticus. A D-A-E-C-U-S. I'm available on LinkedIn under Atticus Brooks. If you want to go to the friendly side of social media, I'm on Facebook, Atticus Jarrell Brooks. That's G-E-R-R-E-L. So those are my two avenues for social media. My email is my first name, atticus@gmail.com. So being that I have a unusual name, I'm the only one with my name, so it'll be easy to find me. So my father's name is George. He has a brother named is George. His daddy's name is George. So he didn't want to go down that rabbit hole, and he once watched To Kill a Mockingbird, and he's like, you know what? I like Atticus. I'm not having a George the Fourth, so Atticus it is.
Well, thanks so much for sharing your story. I have one last question. I like to ask everybody this, because this is a military term and civilians don't really know it. What is your last alibi for our listening audience?
You're not in this alone. Whether you think you're alone, whether you're a loner, you are not in this alone. Definitely reach out to people. Definitely keep your head up. It's going to be okay. It's something that I tell my family. It's something I would tell my Marines if I go back to the shop. It's going to be okay.
Don't do this alone. Beautiful advice. A very creative man, not with just a creative, beautiful name from To Kill a Mockingbird and a father's legacy of wanting to be different, but a genuine creative soul who is going to be entering the workforce here in 6 months. Atticus Brooks, U.S. Marine Corps, Okinawa, Marfor Pack, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
My name is Cheryl Cross. This is the Military to Civilian Career Transition Power Hour. We're finishing up our soup segment. We're going to be rolling into an expert segment. We'll be right back after this brief break. Stay tuned. Very excited to bring you our expert segment on this episode of the Military to Civilian Career Transition Power Hour. Welcome back. I met this lady at PodFest over in Orlando a little bit earlier this year, and I was so blown away and so excited to bring her on the podcast because she is not only a former television producer, but has migrated through the world of children and robotics to training and career coaching. I think just like you're going to have a very interesting career, this woman has too. And for the last 2 years, she has focused exclusively on what's called second act. Second act success. Please welcome our guest, Shannon Russell. Hi, Shannon. Thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Cheryl, I'm so excited to be here and I'm honored that you asked. So I can't wait for this conversation.
When you and I were hanging out in the, I don't know, hotel lobby with a bunch of other podcasters, we were talking about a million things. But one of the things I really resonated with and wanted to bring to my audience was not only your unique perspective, but you mentioned something called UMAP. How would you use that for someone coming out, say, of a very structured career environment like the military and maybe looking to get into the corporate or just the civilian workforce? What is UMAP?
UMAP is a tool, kind of an assessment, but it's more of a tool where it pulls in really your personality, your experience, your skills, your values into one actual UMAP, it's called. And it really aligns everything that you've done in your past, everything that you enjoy doing, things that you do not want to do any longer, and compiles it as a tool that you can use on your job search, or really when you're figuring out what you want to do for your second act, you can look back and reference this tool that really aligns everything. And what's really great about it too is that it helps you with those prompts for when you're in conversations, in a job interview, or even networking, where it'll give you, you know, kind of elements from your past that you might have forgotten that you can bring up in conversation. And it shows really how you can be an asset in that new role.
You know, one of the things that really resonated for me on that was folks coming out of the military have this mission mindset. They're coming from the we and having to go to me when they speak in these interviews and represent themselves. How might that help them using the UMAP experience?
Yeah, it really pulls all of that in. So it'll show you, you know, what have you done? What are your values? What's your personality? And you can kind of really focus in on yourself, because we do work so much and we get so ingrained on the team that we're serving and the customers and clients that we're working with or the team that we're in that we don't focus on ourselves. And it helps you align what you want to do next, because especially for the, you know, your listeners, you're looking for that next step in what you want to do. And you're finally able to ask yourself what will interest you. Mm-hmm. And by looking at it, you know which directions to go in and which to not go in. And so I think it just gives you that ability to turn inwards and have those conversations with yourself, which we don't often do, but it makes you a little bit more aligned and in tuned with really how you can better serve the world in this next stage.
What's the process of going through UMAP? Is it several months, weeks, hours, days? How does that work?
The way I do it is usually it's you take the test and then we meet for three 90-minute sessions and we debrief everything. So you get this tool, you get a workbook, and we really go through everything that the UMAP, you know, kind of divulged for you. Mm-hmm. So you really can take it and move forward. So that's really how I like to do it. You take the test, I get the results, and then we really debrief everything together. So we can probably have it all done within a week or two, depending on your schedule.
Yeah, I don't know how many military-affiliated people you've worked with, and that's fine, because my goal is to bring new voices to this platform. But tell me how this you've seen this work and why you're excited about it.
Yeah, I really do find that it's kind of going back to that piece of making yourself look inward. And then when you find, hey, you know what? I'm really good at numbers, but I don't want to work in numbers any further. And you can kind of take that list of those potential ideas in your head that you think you might want to jump into. And as you kind of do that self-assessment, you can start to say, you know what, I'm going to check that off the list. That's not going to fit me. Or, you know, yes, I think I do want to be around a large team of people, and it's because of this experience that I have. And so I'm going to go down that path. And what I've found in a couple of people I've worked with who are vets have really gone the entrepreneurial route and started their own businesses, or kind of looked at what they did when they were in the military and what they can now use those skills for. And UMAP has helped with that. I guess whether you want to start a business or go into corporate America, it really just helps you align more of what you want so you can make the best decision moving forward. You don't want to land somewhere and then regret that move that you made.
So your background is interesting. And so we're on the topic of changing careers. Where did you came from television producing, and I can tell from your bubbly personality, you'd be a great, producer. I came from broadcasting. I get it. Mm-hmm. And then went into owning a franchise and then became a career coach. So tell us your journey.
I worked in television for about 16 years. And then when I started having a family, things started changing. And it was kind of my aha moment of, okay, I don't know if I can handle these hours and the travel and the stress if I have two little boys at home. And so I started thinking about what else I could do. And it took a lot of soul searching, a lot of missteps. And I ended up just deciding to produce my own life and kind of taking that leap of faith and opening and buying into a franchise. And that was a franchise that I was able to use all my producing skills to grow this business that no one had heard of in my state of New Jersey. In the very beginning, I was the sole person going out and teaching these STEM education classes to children. And people would say, well, what grade did you teach? You're such a great teacher. And I would say, actually, I was in television before this. So it sparked that conversation and people started asking me, well, can you help me figure out how I can change from this to that? Because, you know, it's really scary to change. And mm-hmm. that's where I leapt into working with clients and being a career coach and really helping people navigate that fear and that uncertainty to go from what you've worked your whole life to accomplish, and then making that pivot to something else that might be your next, you know, dream job for your second act. So it's been so rewarding.
I love that you're having people dig deeper.
Yeah.
When you have people dig deep, myself included, I created this podcast because I missed interviewing people. When I transitioned away from corporate recruiting and back into my own consultancy, I was like the boss. You know, I'm out getting, writing proposals, facilitating trainings, but I really wasn't interviewing people anymore. And I missed that. And this gives me a chance to interview. So had I not done some deep soul searching, I wouldn't really be able to pull back from that and go, you know, I really love that. I loved hearing people's stories. So I created a platform for them. And then, you know, I also have a broadcasting background. Do you have clients that you'd like to highlight without naming names? You know, people that have really resonated for you that you'd like?
I have one client who was really struggling. She was doing a 2-hour commute back and forth to Manhattan. And she realized that she worked in her dream job, which was in high fashion in New York City. And she realized after having little kids that she wanted to get a certification in lactation consulting. She decided to use that 2-hour commute each way to study for her certification. And after about a year plus, she became a lactation consultant and now has her own business. So I love sharing that story because she used her time that other people might watch Netflix, but she decided, I'm going to work towards this goal. And when the time is right, it'll happen. Right. And that was really inspirational to me. And I also help other local small business owners. And one of my clients, who was one of my first clients, is finally opening up her own brick and mortar. And that is really exciting. Like, she went from just working with a few clients here and there, and now she's actually getting ready to sign a lease on a space. Mm-hmm. And so it just shows that, like, you can do big things and hard things. It's just nice to dig deep, like you said, and have someone you can lean on for that little bit of accountability.
True. You know, when we sit here and consternate and ruminate over the things, gosh, I should be doing this, I should do this, it's like a vacuum. And it almost gets to becoming catastrophizing if it's just in your head. So I like the fact that there's a process that you can get it out, get feedback on it, which is the thing that, you know, high performers, I'm one of them. It's really hard for me to not work. I can work with people, but we're working on something that I know my role, right? Mm. So it's never a looking inward type thing. It's a go do this thing. We've agreed that we're going to do this. Here's the steps, da, da, da. But internal looking in is tough. Mm. And why do you think that is? I'm curious what your thoughts on are that.
I think it's because we put ourselves in the box. You know, society has told us that we go to school, we choose our major, and that's what we do until retirement. And so I think to really question that and to, you know, have that mindset shift that our career is not our identity, that what we've done for so many years does not define us, is a scary thing to think about, to try to, you know, give yourself permission to reinvent yourself. So I think that is scary to ask yourself, are you happy? Are you doing what you want to do? And for me, I talk a lot about checking all the boxes because I had my dream career and I don't feel like I'm a failure for leaving it. I can go back and do it again tomorrow, but I checked that box. I accomplished that goal. And then I was like, okay, well, what's next? As a high performer, right? We're always up for the challenge. So I said, well, what else can I do? And I want more people to think of it like that, of, you know, we get this one life. So what other adventures can we set up for ourselves to feel fulfilled in that way?
I've been involved in the workspace, in the HR space, in the small business space for over 20 years. And I know how important jobs are, which is why I give so much of my time as a councilwoman for the state of Hawaii for workforce development. I know that jobs can change lives. And to see the disparity of people coming from the military, dumping into the workforce, not being fulfilled, leaving the workforce, sometimes going on state assistance, sometimes becoming shelterless, you know, and again, it's just sort of this backward momentum rather than this forward momentum. So at what point, you know, we sit around the table all the time trying to figure out at what point can we catch them so they don't fall through the cracks. Momentum, keeping the momentum is really hard when you're transitioning from a very, again, structured environment to, and this is, again, I've shared this with you probably at the PodFest. Mm-hmm. I heard these stories from people coming out of the military, Shannon, They were saying words like, I'm going into the great abyss. I'm jumping off a cliff. There were these doomsday words. And I'm sitting on the other side of the fence looking at them going, but there's a bridge right there. Just walk on it. You know, hang on. It might be a little rickety and it's kind of dark. And yeah, you've never walked on it before, but come on, I'm going to hold my hand. Here's my hand. Take my hand. But I'm curious, as we think about this, you know, this perceived jump, I think that's maybe what keeps people from really figuring out what they want to do, because that's scary too. So they have this dreaded timeline, right? Because you're given a certain timeline. You drop your papers, you get X amount of time to figure it all out. And you got to do everything, man. You've got to get your disability rating. Sometimes you have to move, sell a house, buy a house. Your children have to be uprooted, put into a new school. Your spouse, God bless them, if you have one, is doing a lot of the work. So, and getting a job is a job. So you're doing all this other stuff. And then the job seems to always kind of go like, oh, I'll just get a job or I'll just take a job. Mm-hmm. So saying all that, what comes to mind and how you might help somebody?
I always like to say, learn before you leap. And maybe in these circumstances, it's easier to get that job and then kind of figure things out. And maybe that's why there's that, you know, rather large exodus, you know, after that first year or so. But I think if you have time to really learn about what you're jumping into, learn about, you know, it goes back to looking inward, figure out what it is that you think you'll be good at, that you'll want to do, there's less, leaving. There's less, you know, retracting once you learn before you make that leap. So if you're able to kind of take that list of options that you have in front of you, cross out what doesn't fit you, and then realize like, okay, I'm going to narrow down into this field or this particular job, and you have a higher percentage of chance of succeeding and wanting to be there if it's something that you learned and maybe did a little research about first. However, I understand sometimes you just want to leap into something, you need to get that paycheck going. But in the meantime, while you have that, you can start researching other roads, other paths of what you might want to do so that you have that easy transition. That's my big thing, is to learn before you leap and just try to take that time. It is a full-time job looking for a job, but if you can be a little bit more strategic about it, hopefully it'll pay off a little bit in the end and you won't feel like you need to jump again to something else.
What are some of the tools? LinkedIn is how I find majority of my people for the show. And I know that they give a free year of people, to people leaving the military. What are some other tips, techniques, tricks, tools that you would recommend for someone leaving that very structured, predictive military environment?
I think you can do so much from the comfort of home. So yeah, LinkedIn. I find, and a lot of my clients will go into Facebook groups that are in whatever field you're interested in. There's a lot of groups for stay-at-home moms. So for military spouses or stay-at-home dads, military spouses, you can go in there and find remote work, because a lot of times if you are moving around, you need that flexibility of that remote job. So really jumping into groups, you can join a ton of different groups today right after this podcast is over, and just get in there and learn about what other people are doing and network that way. So I think using those online resources, and when you're on LinkedIn, reach out to people from your past, people from high school, people from different areas of your life, and just say, hey, this is what I'm doing. Do you know of any opportunities out there? Or can you introduce me to someone at this company? You have to take some sleuthing and digging around, but you would be amazed at how many people are happy to introduce you or connect you with someone else. Like, you and I do that quite often in our lives just because of, I think, our personalities. But to reach out and not to be afraid, you're not going to be a burden. You're really just using the connections that you have to help you. And then, you know, podcasts and books are great resources to kind of take a couple out of the library and research these opportunities that you have. It doesn't cost you anything. And just use all of those free tools at your disposal.
Old school. Go to the library. That's so old school. New school. Listen to podcasts. What is your podcast, by the way?
It's Second X Success Career Podcast. So I share advice, career tips, job trends, and then Second X success stories like you, Cheryl, because you're going to be on mine coming up soon too. But yeah, just people who have made the transition to, I want listeners to listen and say, oh, if she can do it, I can do it. If he can do it, I can do it. So,
you know, if somebody really wanted to get a hold of you and say, hire you as a coach, is LinkedIn the best way? Do you have a website? And spell your name for those of us who, for those of the people who aren't watching YouTube that they're listening.
Sure. Yeah. So my name is Shannon Russell. So it's Shannon Russell. And yes, I'm on LinkedIn, Shannon Russell Career Coach. And then really secondactsuccess.co is my website. And there's free resources, there's links to different blogs, my podcast, ways to work with me. So everything is at secondactsuccess.co. But I have a new membership I just launched, which is kind of for people who are just trying to get inspired. And that's a monthly membership where there's free masterclasses and we have weekly coaching. And then I have a group program and one-on-one coaching as well. You can do the UMAP just anytime, you know, as a one-off as well.
Oh, so they can go online and do the UMAP?
Oh, secondactsuccess.co/UMAP. Okay. And that's YOUMAP.
Another thing, briefly, because I want to squeeze this in. Shannon also works with in the training world for corporates, and I'm a master trainer. I do learning and development for my clients too, and it has to do with retention, right? Keeping people retained and training them. In the military, training is just part of the job. You know, it's how we stay, how you guys keep alive. It is how you support one another. It's how you support the mission. But in corporate America, you'll be pleased to know that there's a ton of training. And facilitators like Shannon go in, and you are doing something that I've always loved, and it's called Lego Serious Play. Give a plug for that, because I don't think it's talked about enough. What is it? You're just sitting around playing with Legos? Is it more than that?
It is more than that, but it's really adults playing with Legos to figure out their goals, their issues at work. We really work with organizations on goal planning, on figuring out if there's going to be a big change up at the company. We want to get everyone together, and you build with bricks to figure out problems and how to solve them. And we always say that you can figure things out in one workshop of Lego Serious Play rather than 6 months of meetings. So it's fantastic. And you can also go to my website, secondactsuccess.co/Lego Serious Play. And yeah, it's one of my favorite things to do.
It's so much fun. It looks like a lot of fun. I'm going to check that out. All right. So as we end our segments, we ask every single person, and this is a sort of a military saying, do you have any last alibis? So Shannon, what are your last alibis as you close up our segment today?
That you can do whatever your heart desires. And I think just starting a second act is freeing, and to take advantage of that, that we're able to recreate and reinvent ourselves. And I urge everyone to try and do it to their best of their abilities.
Right on. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you so much for being on the podcast. I'll look forward to being on yours as well.
Thank you so much, Cheryl. This has been lovely. I really appreciate it.
Our pleasure. Thank you. That was Shannon Russell, secondactsuccess.co. I'm Cheryl Cross. I'm so pleased to be your host. This is such a fun podcast to do. We'll be right back after this break with the Military to Civilian Career Transition Power Hour. Stay tuned.
Welcome to X-Change.
As we go to the bottom of our hour, which is turned into more of an hour and plus. I need to rename this show because it's no longer just a power hour, it's a power hour plus. But we have our veterans who are coming out of the military. They're in their 1 or 4th year to 4 years, but no more than 5. And this lady here, she's just in her first year. She has great advice to share and will be sharing with us all about her process. I'd like to introduce you to Darcy Babs Babutsky.
Good morning.
So you and I connected through LinkedIn, which is how I find a lot of my folks. And yes, you were sharing stories and helping people, which is usually how I find people who want to be on the podcast. You have some information that you'd like to share about your out-processing because of a med board. Would you like to start with that?
Oh, absolutely. I always like to joke, you know, when we join the service, nobody wants to be that old and broken, you know, service member, you know, going out medically. But I hope by sharing my story, you know, just know that there are some great avenues out there for folks and really just remove that stigma because, you know, I want folks, and I know to the military and that whole community, they want folks to get better before they depart. So it's very important to really know the way forward, understand that process. And it is actually a process. It doesn't happen overnight. It's not like a week or 2 weeks. I know for me, when I got a diagnosis and they said, hey, we're going to push you forward to the medical evaluation board, I went through the process 7-8 months. And then I ended up getting returned to duty with limitations, meaning I could still do my job, but I couldn't deploy and I couldn't go to certain overseas locations. Even though we didn't know if there was a fix or a cause for my medical issues, you know, I was still making those medical appointments. And at that point, I had over 20 years, but I really had hoped before retiring that I would have the opportunity to find that cause and get treatment before I left the service. Unfortunately, you know, I've been out for almost 7 months, still don't know the cause of my issues, but did find a way to help mitigate the pain and everything associated with my medical issue. So going through, had, you know, some surgeries and, you know, trials and surgeries and things of that nature. The whole time, they're like, okay, cool, great. We need to do a reevaluation on you. And the whole time, you know, I went from one part of my organizational structure up to the, like, a front office admin support role. And the whole time, and I always tell people, you know, keeping leadership apprised of those situations is very key. Like, communication is so important, not only for, like, your family, but your team as well. So what ended up happening in my situation, it was actually, I can laugh about it now, but at the time it was really frustrating. I found out they basically decided they were going to proceed into the what they call the IDES process. It's your Integrated Disability Evaluation System. It's people basically just call it the med board process, but it has a formal name, many steps. I actually got to the step where they're like, you know, you can't deploy, you can't do these things, let's go ahead and recommend medical retirement. And some people don't realize you can actually get medically retired even if you have over 20 years in, which was my case, which means that if they do decide to medically retire a person, you get coded to where you cannot request retirement, you can't PCS, you can't PCA. So any kind of plans that a service member has, if they reach that stage in this process, you know, you got to start looking at, you know, different plans. You know, I had plans A, B, C, and D, you know, I ended up in Z at some point, you know, just because, you know, life happens, it doesn't go as planned. And I found out that they decided they were going to proceed with recommendation to the board to medically retire me. And when that happened, I went from one point of contact within the medical process for the board to another person. And somehow it fell through the cracks, basically. And oops, we forgot. You know, I got forgotten about for about 5 months until I was like raising the flag going, hey, wait a minute. I really need an update. What's going on? So
all this, and you're trying to plan a next career and where exactly you're going to live. And did you stay, without giving a location, did you stay in your last duty station or were you planning on moving to your home of record? What was that?
Luckily, we were in a location that my husband and I really love and enjoy. So we decided to stay here. So that was really a good blessing for us. Mm-hmm. Because normally when you can request retirement, you can request up to a year out. When you're going through the med board process and they make that determination, you basically start filling out a worksheet, you start calculating how much terminal leave that you have saved up. You get like 20 days of permissive TDY for like house hunting and things of that nature. Plus you get, I want to say it's like 15 duty days to out process. So really you are filling out this worksheet and you're like, for me, I was briefing my leadership, like, hey, as soon as this comes down, it's going to be quick. And it was, and it was like, okay, great. I start terminal leave in like less than 2 weeks. So
my goodness, it's
no joke. So that's where I say, like, life happens and you need to have all these contingencies in place. I was fortunate in the sense that I had already gone through one medical review board and got returned to duty. So during that time frame, I had already taken TAPS once. So I was kind of planning as best as I could for the situation. But when I came back through the second time, I went ahead and was able to fortunately take TAPS a second time and see what had changed. Because, you know, COVID was going on during this time frame as well. So everything was virtual on the computer, and which is fantastic, but sometimes it's nice to get that face-to-face discussion, yeah, especially in like a larger classroom setting.
Sure.
Again, share those stories, you know, best practices. I was fortunate because I was in more of a staff type of position that a lot of people would go there and they would retire. So like I was fortunate. I was working with like an amazing colonel who was going through the process of writing retirement, and you know, he was pulling me and a handful of other folks aside, just wonderful mentor, saying, hey, here's what I'm learning in my executive level TAPS, and these great like workshops that he was able to attend. And he was, you know, really amazing with sharing that information. So even though those going through the medical board process, you know, yes, your timeline is shrunk down, but if you're reaching out and, you know, asking for help, there's such great information out there that you're able to have those multiple layers of plans that you can pretty much execute as needed based on where you're at and how things shake out essentially with that process.
It's just, it sounds like life comes at you really quickly once they make the decision.
It absolutely does, yes. And ironically, I was somebody that was part of my organization had a similar procedure done. And whereas I was recommended for retirement, they were recommended to be returned to duty with limitations. So one case, although it might be very similar, the outcomes may not necessarily be the same.
Right.
So it's always great to share those things, but just know that, you know, depending on what the board's looking at, it might be looking at, you know, how long has a person been in the service? You know, what is their job qualifications? You know, they might have a very in-demand career that they're willing to be like, well, we're not going to deploy them anyways, but they can still be useful, you know, because they're high demand field. Mm-hmm. So
what was your MOS and specialty over those 20 years?
We ended up switching just before I retired. So I was became a 1 Delta 7, which is basically just cyber system support. So IT support by trade.
Okay. That's an in-demand job in the workforce. And
absolutely.
I would imagine, so the civilian world thinks you all just pop out of the military and just get a job. And this podcast was created because that's just not how it works. And no. My goal is to educate not just people coming out of the military. I wrote a book called The 3-Year Guide, Civilian Mission. And I also work with a lot of companies on educating them about how they may attract, hire, retain people coming out of the military and military spouses. So this is something that's very heart-centered for me because I see this huge chasm of misinformation out there. Help us pull the thread on what your job search was like during this incredibly chaotic time. How were you reaching out to people? I mean, it sounds like things were changing on a maybe daily or weekly basis.
Absolutely.
How were you trying to get a job during all this?
Goodness. So my first priority was I was in a position to where I worked in secure environments. So step one was always going through security and getting my resume cleared for public release. So once that piece was done, at that point, it was putting feelers out, you know, updating my profile on LinkedIn, going to as many networking events, job fairs, things of that nature, checking out, you know, uploading my resume to websites that are really in tune for folks within the cyber career fields, you know, with or without security clearances. And from there, what I've been sharing with some of my folks that have reached out to me since I've actually retired was I kept it simple. I just created a spreadsheet and said, you know, here was the event or how I was contacted, who the POC was, how did I contact them? And if, you know, there was any additional action, whether it was submitting a resume to them, you know, did I get an interview? So, I mean, I was very like clean cut, let me state all those great organizational skills that we learn in the military, mm-hmm. paramount when job searching. And, you know, social media and the internet has made it, you know, so whether, you know, somebody wants a job, you know, going into an office somewhere or work from home position, you know, there's all these different avenues to look for those things. Mm-hmm. It was not easy. It took me several months to decide on a job and actually accept a job offer. Because, you know, I had some of the big contract companies even reaching out to me, and
oh, I bet.
Yeah. All great positions. But for me, I wanted to find something that was like a really good fit for me.
Explore that more, because I don't think, you know, again, I've got an entire chapter on figuring out what is it you want to do to align with your skills and your interests and that location. So you've got a location you've pre-selected. You have this big, sexy job. I know you probably have a very big, sexy clearance too. I'm curious, did you want to work remote or were you willing to go into a SCIF? I didn't ask that question.
I was actually open to either or. For me, second nature, you know, I'm used to, you know, having a day planner with a pen or a pencil in hand to schedule my day, because I'm used to those environments where you can't have a phone on you. So really, I was flexible either way. I mean, there's definitely I know like my husband works from home like 50-50. So like, I see firsthand those benefits, but I know personally for me, I was fine either way. Because really what it came down for me was really job satisfaction. I was even, you know, willing when I was looking at negotiating the pay and the benefits was really, it still was balancing out that job satisfaction. I love being challenged. So
I like that you used the word negotiate. How was your negotiation experience? Curious.
It was a little nervy, very nerve wracking. But I know I had a really great recruiter, and, you know, they had initially, you know, set one set of parameters that they were willing to pay. And then they came in with lower than that. And I was like, okay, I was like, well, we talked earlier about this higher amount. You know, can you talk more about the benefits package? And can we talk about that budgetary window that you were looking at as advertised, you know, and kind of went from there. And we went back and forth about, you know, two or three times, and we were able to agree upon, you know, a salary. So.
Okay. And what I like that you did, and this is something I'm writing in my next book, which may be out when people are listening, but I've taught workshops on this, and this was kind of what started this whole process for me, was that you got to look at the base salary as part of the total compensation package. It's one of the most negotiable parts of something, and maybe a sign-on bonus. But bigger companies don't have a lot of flexibility in their benefits. And what you all have, and maybe you have this too, is you have medical. You may have medical that you don't need to buy into their health insurance, but that might not be an option for you not to buy in. So it's not something they can take off the table in order to give you something else. Do you see what I'm saying?
That's so flexibility, yes.
Yeah, flexibility, usually the best flexibility is in that base salary and a potential sign-on bonus if they offer it. Now, again, Darcy, you're at a contracting company. So those contracts are won because they've bid on a price per head, right?
Absolutely, yes.
And something a lot of people don't understand is that the contract might not allow what it is you're worth. And that sucks, quite frankly. As a recruiter, that was one of the hardest conversations I had, because you want to get very open with people. And I love that you said you had a great recruiter. But what frustrates me is you said, we had this conversation about a range, and then they came in under the range. That frustrates me for you. But it sounds like
it was frustrating, but I took good notes, and I was like, well, we talked about this, you know, a couple of days ago, and, you know, and you know, it's always great to get things in like email or text message or whatever, but I also bent the paper, was taking notes. So I go back to my spreadsheet and said, hey, this is what the, you know, what the offer salary range was on the job posting, because the recruiter actually found me, and I didn't stumble like magically upon this interesting job opportunity. So
nice. Yes. That adds a little bit more flavor to the context. Sometimes, and I'm not saying all recruiters do this, in order to get your attention, they may throw out numbers. You know, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of job openings in the cyber world, for sure. And, you know, it has been this for the last five, six years that I've been working in the DOD, just in the region I'm in. So, and they anticipated by this year, there would be 2 million jobs open that we couldn't find people for. Now the new thing, of course, is data science and AI, but cyber is still very important and we still don't have that workforce. So in order to get people's attention, they throw out numbers. Hey, I have this big sexy job. Hey, I've got this. This could pay you up to X amount of dollars. You know, I don't know if that was their technique or not, but be wary of that. You want, like Darcy, you said this perfectly. I was looking for a job that fit. And you got to look at everything, right? Their core ethics. How did the recruiter treat you? How did those hiring managers, were you interviewing them as well as them interviewing you? How was your interview experience without naming the company? We don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but how was your interview experience? What was that process like?
The interview process went very well. Initially, I talked to the recruiter, shared my resume, and felt like the position that he was looking to fill felt like I'd be a really good fit because I came from that organization. I was familiar with the landscape, the people. I know how to brief stars and bars, if you will, things of that nature. So it put me through. I actually did come similar session, like a Teams meeting type of interview. Mm-hmm. And ironically enough, the recruiter from the company I had found out was actually a subcontract off the main contract. We did the interview with one of the employees from the subcontract. He submitted his thoughts, like if I'd be a good fit or not, submitted my resume up with his notes up to the primary contract. And ironically, the primary contract was like, no, we want to hire her directly. So I didn't know that that was a thing. So apparently that is not unheard of. They had to do some back-end admin contract magic to basically transfer the position under the primary contract. And then it just kind of, everything went fairly smoothly. A couple of days, you know, we went back and forth with the negotiations and everything. And I absolutely interviewed the individual that was connecting the interview as well.
Good.
Because like you said, it's almost like speed dating, right? You have to make sure it's a good fit on both sides of that table. So I was very fortunate that I was able to ask more questions. And because a good portion of my career was based on standing up new processes or procedures or programs, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And this was kind of part of what this new position entails. And literally it's, hey, this thing has been directed to use this special program and things of that nature. And like, all right, that's well within my wheelhouse. This is a really fun challenge. And I know the organization. So, you know, I got to ask those questions. Hey, tell me more about this program because this is very new. I've never heard of it before. And, mm-hmm. you know, we went back and forth and we really decided that I would probably be a good fit for the position. So
that's wonderful. You're continuing the mission. And it sounds like you're doing it on your own terms. Can you go back to we talked about the process of being med boarded. And this isn't a medical show, it's a career show, but this had a complete impact on your process. What were some of the other things that people don't think about that might be valuable to them as they prepare? Again, we don't know when these situations are going to happen. We can't prepare to be injured. We can't prepare for illness. What would you say some of the other things that sort of surprised you outside of the process?
I think one of the things that I feel was a really great benefit was part of once they decide they are going to med board you or medically retire or separate a service member, you actually go through the VA claims process while still on active duty. So for me, I actually had my proposed VA rating before I even had my retirement orders in hand. So for me, that was a huge benefit to see that proposed rating so that I could work that in as part of my future job of salary and benefits negotiation. So that I could see like, okay, do I need to offset or not offset? Or am I willing to maybe accept less salary based upon this other income? Mm-hmm. So that was definitely a huge benefit.
Can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
Did you include that in your conversation with the recruiter?
I let them know that I would not be taking any of the medical insurance. And I did tell them, you know, like I did inform them that I was getting VA, but I didn't tell them like where I was at or anything like that. I just said I wouldn't need any like medical insurance or anything of that nature.
Good. Okay, good.
Wouldn't even consider that as part of the negotiation discussion.
Good. Thank you.
It's none of their business.
Exactly. It's none of their business. It's none of their business that you're getting disability. It's none of their business that you're pulling on your retirement. It's none of their business what is in your bank account. That job, the value you bring to that job, you get paid for that value, period. So I found it remarkable when I was recruiting people that they would just tell me things. And I was like, I'm not writing this down. I'm not keeping this in the back of my head. That is something you keep to yourself. And please, please don't tell the hiring team. I mean, we're trained at the companies I worked with and the companies I consult to never use this as a bias. That this is just, you know, overshare happens. People get comfortable. They want to get closer to you. They want to share details of their lives. And every recruiter will say this, I've heard the most ridiculous things, but you know, you hold it. It's like HIPAA. I would imagine healthcare professionals hear it all too. You know, you're pulling people through a very big process and an important process. So if you're a recruiter listening to this, please just be mindful that those things don't all have to go on the piece of paper unless they have to do with the job. Because we don't want to let our hiring managers become biased, and those unconscious biases might pop up too.
Oh, absolutely. And I know I have, just to make things easier, I know like for me, I had a medical device surgically implanted that it comes with a remote control. You know, it does communicate with like Bluetooth and things of that nature. So I did let them know just in case there was concerns about bringing that into a secure facility. I had been cleared for the particular facility before I even had the procedure done. Because nothing like, you know, trying to better your health and find out, oh, sorry, we have to put you somewhere else to work.
Well, you can't even have a smartwatch in a skiff. I mean, I can't imagine what an implanted device that would just throw them for a loop, right?
They were actually good sports about it. I provided all of the tech data for us, and hey, this is the, you know, the Bluetooth range and like all these things that go with that, so they can make that decision. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I did that before I even had the trial surgery, before they did the full permanent implant. I was like, hey, and they're like, oh, maybe we get this device, this and that, and they're like, yeah, we would sign off on that. And like, all right, cool, got the paperwork done for the trial, and then once it was permanently implanted, got, you know, all of that paperwork. Because anybody that's ever worked in a skiff before knows, like, you can have certain things, like some smartwatches, like I have a sleep ring that I wear that, you know, provided by the military. So it was already, you know, blessed off to be in the facility. So, yeah, I mean, I just wanted to, you know, get that out there once I got into the negotiations and the interview piece, just because I didn't want to get excited for a position just to find out, yeah, I'm sorry, you can't get in the building with that. Because to me, I don't want to waste people's time in that aspect.
Oh, that would be so complicated on the back end. Had you become, you know, integrated into your role and been there for 6 months, then all of a sudden you find out you can't.
That was a concern.
Yeah, right. You said something to me that resonated with me. I even wrote it down. Go call Babs. What were people calling you about?
Just the medical board process, you know, like what does that timeline look like, or what are the steps for it? Like I said, there was somebody that had a similar device that I had implanted. So they were, you know, like, hey, what was that trial like? What was the recovery like? And, you know, I had folks that like section chiefs or their division colonels coming over. I'm like, I had this great diagram that said, you know, it sounded like your members in this part of the stage of the AIDS process. Like, I can't give you a timeline, but just know that this is where they're at, and this is, you know, per our, you know, Department of Defense instructions, like this could take anywhere from 6 weeks to 6 months, you know, like that's the average. So yeah. It was interesting becoming a subject matter expert on something outside of like the information technology realm.
Right. Not quite cyber. Just
but still very important nonetheless from the administrative and HR standpoint for sure.
There's a gentleman out and about, he's retired now, Kirk Windmuller, and he has a PDF that is absolutely famous. And it took me a while to interview him, and he's on one of my segments, but this PDF is just internet famous. He's like, have people still ask for it? I just put it on my LinkedIn profile. You can download it now. Do you have anything that's like that? Are you going to become LinkedIn internet famous for your IDS process sheet?
Yeah, I haven't really shared it on LinkedIn too much, but I've had people reach out. I'm always happy to, you know, send an email, you know, make a phone call, whatever. I'm perfectly happy behind the scenes. Like, I'm perfectly content being a support function. So. Yeah.
Well, but, I love your spirit. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Your energy and your enthusiasm for your role sounds exciting to me. And just the fact that you wanted to share your story here with me today, I know you're going to help a lot of folks. How might someone get a hold of you?
Absolutely. I always tell people if you can spell my last name, you can find me on LinkedIn and on Facebook for sure. And I always tell people if you ever have questions, whether it's military in general, Air Force, cyber. A lot of people know me back from providing the communication security support for a very low density, high demand flying asset. You know, like I have people just like reaching out all the time, and I'm always happy to assist people.
So, spell your name for those people with ear pods.
Oh goodness! So yes, Babs comes from my last name Babutsky, because when I got married, nobody could pronounce my name. I'll spell it phonetically for folks. It's Bravo Alpha Bravo Uniform Tango Zulu Kilo Echo, and my first name is Darcy. So Delta Alpha Romeo Charlie Yankee.
And thank you so much. So
say hi if anybody has questions and concerns, or just want somebody just to vent with. Like, I'm more than happy to be that person.
Awesome. I see a side hustle in your future, friend. I see it. All right, we're going to close up the show, but I say this with everyone. Do you have any last alibis before we say goodbye?
I always tell people, don't be afraid to reach out to your universe, to your family, friends, coworkers, groups. I know for me, where I'm at now, I've been involved in a women's veterans group that has just been an amazing support and help and guidance, and seeing where these amazing trailblazing women have been before me and taking their lessons learned and definitely paying it forward, and just, you know, find that niche and just, you know, just put it out into your universe and, you know, don't be afraid to ask for help, because it's, you ask and people will deliver. People, you know, from my experience have been amazing in helping me out, answering questions, and I'm just excited to be able to return that favor in such a great and meaningful way. So thank you, Cheryl, for that opportunity.
My pleasure. Thank you. And thank you for your support, your continued support for the mission. We're listening to Darcy Babutsky. Babs. Call Babs. Just call Babs. I see it on the side of a van, like a plumber. It sounds terrible. Just call Babs.
Just find me on social media.
My name is Cheryl Cross. This is the 1 to 4 year veteran segment. We're going to be taking a short break and coming back with someone who's been out of the military for 5 years. You're listening to the Military to Civilian Career Transition Power Hour. We'll be right back. As we head into the last segment of our Power Hour Plus, I have the honor and the privilege to bring you my first chaplain. I would like to introduce you to Scott McCosh. Hi, Scott. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, Cheryl. Thanks so much for having me. It's an honor.
You've had a really interesting transition. Why don't you just start and tell us your incredible background and how you landed where you are today?
As a chaplain, I was a direct commission officer into the Army National Guard in May of 2001, in a really different world, and started training that summer thinking, hey, this is a great part-time job as I pastor a small church and try to pay off my student loans from graduate school. When 9/11 happened, all of a sudden things changed rapidly for the National Guard, and I found myself deployed to Kosovo, relieving an active duty unit so they could get ready to go head in the initial invasion in Iraq. And quickly looked in the mirror and realized that the operational tempo wasn't going to slow down even for the National Guard. And so after 3 years with them, after a tour in Kosovo with the National Guard, came on active duty, where I served with the 101st Airborne and did a tour in Iraq, and then came to Fort Liberty, North Carolina, formerly Fort Bragg, to serve with 7th Special Forces Group, and did two tours to Afghanistan. And at that point, realized, boy, the time away from home is just a ton, and began to wrestle with, was it time to make a break? Eventually, in 2011, chose to come off active duty and back to the reserve component instead of the Army National Guard. And I've been serving there for 12 years and had to make the adjustment not only in my military transition from one component to the other, but back into a full-time civilian job. And so chose to pastor a church right outside here of Fayetteville, North Carolina, the home of Fort Liberty, and did that for about 11 years. And then for the past 2 years, I've been working here at a community college. And every day now I get to spend working with military and veterans in transition.
You've had a lot of shifts and bursts. And I think, you know, there's even a misunderstanding amongst active duty folks about reservists. I know they think of it as, that's an option for me to continue my military connection after I leave, you know, full-time active duty. But you all can go full-time too. As a civilian, this was fascinating to me to learn, and I still don't understand all of the nuances and the differences. So how have you navigated all of that? And maybe elucidate me, educate me.
Yeah, so what's really unique about the reserve force, we do have an active guard and reserve component where there are folks that serve full time, keeping things going in the office, if you will, and the planning and the execution of long-term operations within the reserve component. Somebody like me, you know, as we affectionately were known for years as the weekend warriors, just, you know, have a monthly requirement to be with your unit. But as the transitions within the military have occurred, we call it an operational reserve now, ready to serve, you know, at any call. And so what was really unique for me is came off the active component, went into the reserve, being here near a huge active duty Army post, I was able to maintain relationships, didn't really, you know, foresee a lot of mobilizations. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of COVID, I get a phone call and said, hey, you're going to be activated to go out west where your unit is to support FEMA and do whatever it is that needs to be done in the midst of the mystery of COVID. And so all of a sudden, in the middle of everybody shutting down, I got ramped up full time and went out to Utah where my headquarters was. And we supported FEMA all up and down the West Coast. So it was it's unique. And the reserve, I think, serves a really unique mission set. But as a result, we get one foot in each world. Right? We're in that military world and sometimes in that every day. And then we also have, you know, a foot in the civilian world. And that's what makes it so much fun.
It sounds like you're not sitting in a cubicle per se, but I would imagine that being a part of the clergy of a church would require a lot of hands-on. How was that conversation with, was it a corporate entity that had the church? I'm curious because corporate, you know, there's USERRA laws, there's all these fabulous things that protect you all from bias, from discrimination, from getting fired. And by the way, if any of you need to know what those are, please look them up and protect yourself. But, or call your HR person. And if they don't know, have them call me because I will educate them. But I'm curious, has that been a rocky road for you? Have you run into any discrimination? Was that difficult? Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. It is definitely unique. The, you know, in my particular case, the local laity at the congregation were really the only body that I was accountable to, but also as a result, there, you know, the protections that are in place in most of the industry aren't necessarily there. Knowing that going in, I did a pretty good job selling my employer on the benefits of being in the reserve component. So they knew that while I had, you know, monthly duty and oftentimes would, you know, have to be away or having to travel to visit, you know, folks that I was supervising in downtrace units, that it was a win for them. And being in an active duty military community, that my military affiliation helped out. But, you know, I'll be honest, I don't think they were prepared at all for the mobilization, especially with COVID. I did a bunch to try to figure out, one, the military civilian relationship there as far as maintaining employment, but two, hey, how do you transition from in person to online services and things while you're in another place? So many times I would share my you know, Sunday morning message from my phone in Utah while I was mobilized there back here to North Carolina. So it was really unique. I'm thankful being in a military community that had those protections. Although I do know that there's colleagues that have been on the Guard and Reserve side and been clergy and really had a hard time stepping back in, because, you know, small churches just have oftentimes one paid staff, and when you're gone, it's tough to continue things and be protected.
Do you help advocate for people who may need a voice?
Absolutely, and that's. It's one of the nice things now with, you know, two decades of military service and a lot of that being in the Guard and Reserve, to be able to say, hey, you know, let me share my story. I've been there. Let me advocate. Let me help you on the front end, educate your employer so that they know. And then also do some things when it comes to celebrating employers to say, hey, you know, we don't want to only talk about our military service when things are going wrong, but how do you do the employer support of the Guard and Reserve and nominate your employer for an award or a certificate and make a big deal out of it?
And get them on a C-17. I went on a boss lift. It was so much fun. I literally was in my location for 2 weeks and I was asked to go because someone couldn't. So I went and I had no idea what it was. And here I am strapped to the inside of a C-17 flying from Honolulu to Hilo to look at Black Hawk helicopters and talk to loadmasters and sit in a cockpit. I mean, it was, I felt like a kid and I couldn't stop talking about it. You know, it was such an impact for me. Now, I worked for a very well-known DOD government contractor and everybody knew me through my company, right. But I knew nothing about this environment. This was all, I was like a kid in a candy store. I cannot tell you enough, if you are aligned to a Guard or Reserve unit, find your ESGR nonprofit and invite your boss. If you're having any amount of discrimination or shade, and it does exist, I mean,
absolutely,
the even the bigger corporations could be like, you're doing what? You're leaving what? And can you say, is my job going to be there? Which, yes, it should be. Well, we can't say that that's going to, it's like, yes, they need to say that it's going to be there.
Absolutely.
You need to be able to go and do your duty. So I think it just gives a greater understanding. When that loadmaster in front of me was working full time at the refinery and giving time for, like you said, weekend warrior, but he talked about his deployments and how important they were. Having worked in the oil and gas industry, even as a consultant, I know how important those refinery folks are, because it's a utility, right? They're really moving some essential things for the people on an island and a state. So, you know, again, it's such an interesting world for me, and I don't want to take away from your story. Scott, you are doing some really interesting things that is extrapolating on not only your service, but your background and your profession. You said something that really resonated with me. This feels like what I'm trying to do, which is to bring an oral history. You know, the voices of 100 people. That's my goal for this podcast, just this podcast. I have ideas for other ones, but the oral history is so important, not just for documentation, but for resonance. I believe people will remember a story more than a book or in TAPS class. So that's why you're here and that's why I'm here interviewing you. Talk to us about this project that you're doing, the Listening Project.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to have been able to kind of stumble upon it here working at the community college. And some of that's my transition. So I always remind folks, as you transition out of the military, that the first job you have is probably not, you know, the thing you've always dreamt of. And so I came to the community college about 2 years ago working as a success coach and advisor, and got to meet some folks and learned about this, North Carolina history project they were doing, again, oral histories, looking for military and veteran stories. And so one of the history profs invited me to come tell my story, and I was able to do that. And as I did that, kind of finished, and I think as most of us do, said, hey, this is, the story that's mine, and it's probably not of interest to you. And he said to me, no, I've actually never served myself, and your story helps me, understand a little bit better the community in which we live. And would you be interested in sharing some more? And the really neat part of it for me was, he continued to just kind of follow up with me. And I said, well, I've been trying to get some thoughts out on paper, but I really enjoyed, our dialogue in the oral history project. So thanks for that opportunity. And I know you've done some writing. Would you be willing to look at some things? And as we talked about the struggle of the writing process, he said, you're a talker. And I think you really might enjoy just continuing to tell your story. Would you be willing to come and let me work with you? You tell the story. I'll try to put it then on paper as in first person using your voice. It'll challenge me as a writer, he said, and give you a chance to tell your story. And as we've gone through that process for months now, what we've come to find out, the joy in it is that, and the hope is that as we tell our stories, we give other people permission to tell theirs. So one of the things that's really resonated in my role as a chaplain, especially in the difficult times in my military service or in my service as clergy on the civilian side, is to walk alongside people who are suffering and struggling. And I know in combat in particular, when one of our soldiers would get killed, I had to stand in front of that soldier's battle buddies and seek to offer some words of hope. And oftentimes I would just, tears would just gush out and I would have to pause, had a hard time, keeping my voice and my composure. A lot of folks, said, oh, that's a shame. That's hard. And I said, no, me crying gave them permission to cry. Yeah. Me sharing that emotion gave them permission. Me sharing the stories of my pain, my hurt in those moments gave them permission, to hurt, even though we had to carry on in the middle of that. And my hope is, as I tell my story, that I give them the permission to say, hey, tell yours, the good, bad, and the ugly. And I think that's sometimes the hard part, is to let it come out, right? Those, the ugly stuff, maybe the times when you say, hey, the transition into the civilian world was hard because, I love wearing the uniform and being gone and going to do cool stuff. And it's hard to give that up. And so I love to tout that, yeah, I'm a chaplain and a family guy, but a lot of times I get sucked into work because it feels good. It's where I get the wind in my sails sometimes. And so having to tell that part of my story, and then again, to slide back through. So that oral history project has been great because it's a lot easier than writing. You don't have to sit down. You don't need a computer. You don't have to worry about grammar. You just spill it and know that it's out there. And then there's a lot of things you can do with it, whether you choose to or not. But at least the stories aren't lost, especially as somebody, it's now in my 50s and realizing that the generations that I wish I had some more stories from aren't there to tell them anymore.
Yes.
And so, I just hold dear to those times where, I sat at a table with my great grandmother and she, born in 1890, would tell me about her childhood, right? Or my grandfather, who was a Pearl Harbor survivor, would share a little bit about, what it was like. He wouldn't talk much, but to hear that stuff and then to pass that on to my kids and to others, and hopefully in doing so, give other people permission to do the same thing.
You talk about the generation, the silent generation that didn't talk of the war. My father was the same way. He served during the Korean War, but was not in combat, but never spoke of it. Never.
Yeah. And that is such the forgotten war, too. My dad served in between Korea and Vietnam. And you know, wasn't in combat, but said, you know, I lost so many friends in both sides, right? Older guys and younger. And they didn't have a way to talk about it. Although I am thankful. I feel like one of the things I've seen in my transitioning years is that silent generation, that forgotten generation, finding some healing as they become those who sit alongside and listen to the stories of our current combat vets, you know, from Iraq and Afghanistan. So what's been really neat is our, you know, to seeing kind of a resurgence. I know the numbers don't show it out, but, you know, at the VFWs or here in our community college, in our veteran, student veteran association, and to watch the older generation find purpose in listening to those stories of, you know, these younger vets. And then kind of the reverence in some ways that those younger guys have for the older ones whose stories never got told. And so really fun here, and usually at our local watering holes, to hear those stories told again and again, but sometimes for the first time.
I would imagine that in your position, it's probably pretty hard for folks to come to you. You assume that they could because you opened the door, but it's hard to admit failure because people see pain as failure, right?
Right.
What are some of the techniques that you use for folks? I mean, do you get a spidey sense? Do you kind of feel that someone's withhold? What's your technique? I'm curious.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I think the first thing is to realize, hey, people aren't necessarily going to come to me. I need to get to them, right? So we have a really great veteran-owned brewery here that opened up in the middle of nowhere out near my church. And as I was on airplanes and stuff, people knew that location. They would say to me, you know, as we talked on an airplane, like, I might visit your church. I'm like, don't do that. You know, a better chance of meeting you over here, you know, because the conversation we're having isn't the conversation necessarily that I was having in the church. And to be in those places, right, and spaces, and to really almost become a chaplain in the community rather than the cleric that is, you know, behind the holy wall. So that's number one. I think the second thing is, and I posted this on my LinkedIn today, there's this great verse that says, you know, be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. And that quick to listen piece, I see every day, everybody has a story, and, you know, even not always a big meta narrative, right? But just today's story, right? It was a hard morning. My kid yelled at me before I left for work. And so they come in and now they're yelling at somebody at, you know, in my office. And I listen for that. I go out and just finding space for them to share that frustration. And then asking maybe a deeper question, you know, boy, sounds like it was a hard morning. And then, you know, they share about the morning. And the next thing you know, we're sharing not just about the morning, but maybe the last, you know, 30 days. And then maybe a little bit bigger. And so I think sometimes just meeting people where they are. But yeah, absolutely. It's hard. One of the things that's always hard, there's times when wearing the uniform opens doors, and there's times when wearing the uniform closes them. And as a reservist, that's always weird. You know, how to, I don't want to say play that game, but there are times when in this community of active service folks that, you know, knowing that I'm still in matters, that even if it's on the reserve side. And there are other times when I go, hey, you guys are killing me as you transition out, because all you know is the military world. I get to sit at a table, even in my reserve, you know, meetings with CEOs of banks and postal workers and business owners and just all kinds of people that every day are in the struggle of being in industry, but are, you know, also understand the lingo of military culture and have walked in those, you know, those boots in pervasive conflict in the last 20 years. And so it's a really unique opportunity to try to give an opening for folks to share their stories.
You shared a story with me before we hit record, and it had to do with the number 20 in Kosovo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh, I feel old. Cheryl, it happened fast, right? So it feels like yesterday I just joined the military. And now, just a couple months ago, went back to the regimental ball for my Pennsylvania Army National Guard unit that went to Kosovo 20 years ago. And it was a trip to see all the old guys that I went with who weren't old when I went with them, right? And I'm looking, going, gosh, and they look at me and I'm, you know, I'm one of these gray-haired guys. It's really powerful to connect. And to be honest with you, I've kept in touch through, you know, the joys of modern platforms, but I had not seen this group of guys since we returned home. Wow. As soon as I got off that deployment, I went on active duty. And so to be in that room and to feel like we really hadn't skipped a beat, to share and laugh and tell stories, to honor the guys that weren't with us anymore, that, you know, we had one soldier committed suicide while we were there. We've had others that we've lost since. And to be in that room was so powerful. And to be honest, it was really hard to go. It would have been easy to say that weekend, hey, the drive to Philly, 7.5 hours. You know, my kids have stuff going on. I really don't have the time. And I remember that the 20 mattered to me, right? For me, that was kind of a line in the sand. Hey, don't miss this. Because if you miss this, you're not going to go at 21, because that's just a weird, you know.
Yeah.
And so I went. And then I realized, hey, and, you know, in 25, I've got 20 years coming up from my Iraq, you know, deployment. And the question now, hey, how do I get folks together? How do we continue? Because I think one of the things, as I listen to some of your podcasts, to realize that we're always in transition, right?
Yeah.
As folks that serve in the military, that always informs who we are, even as we, you know, develop into different stages in life, that stuff absolutely matters, and we bring it with us. And to have those people who walked with us then and to see where they are now can motivate and inspire, or definitely can challenge, you know, regardless of the thing, and then remind you you're not alone. And that's so powerful in a world where loneliness, and especially saw a special last night on PBS, the struggle of loneliness for men, aging men in America. They just, you know, don't have friends. And these guys that you've put your life on the line with, they say they'll be there. And it's pretty cool after 20 years to realize, hey, they still are. And they reach out and they want you to be a part. And so to me, I think that's a really hopeful message to give folks in transition, to say, you may be stepping out of the uniform, you may be stepping away from this day to day, but you're always a part of that community.
Who takes care of the caretaker? I've asked this for many people that are in the service side of both the military, suicide prevention, awareness, therapist. Who takes care of you?
COVID was a real eye-opener for me. As the person that's the caretaker, as the person that others look to and lean on oftentimes, you want to have, you know, you want to be resilient. You want to talk about resiliency. You want to represent that to people. And then I hit a point where I was exhausted. I knew that I was depleted. I was running and doing more physical activity than I had done in forever. I had lost weight, felt like I was in great shape, but realized I was running from trying to figure out all the stuff going on in my life, right? I was about to hit 50. That was a huge transition. I knew it was probably time to leave my church and do something else, but where do I go? And I'm really thankful. I had a handful of other helping professionals that, you know, reached out, hey, how are you? And having the permission to say, I'm not doing well, was huge. Yeah. And to know that I trusted them enough. And then also to have somebody that I paid, right? So for the first time in my life, I remember, you know, could get off onto all kinds of parenting stories, but my adult daughter looked at me and said, hey, Daddy, you need to talk to somebody. And that was really eye-opening. And I commend her for that. You know, she said, look, you're angry and you're not the guy that I know. And I don't know why. And I don't know that you know why, right? So will you go talk to somebody? And then to find that person, that pro, who then said, hey, you know, I can do this for you. You know all the lingo. You know how to do this. You've sat on this side of the couch, if you will. But who do you have, right? And so making that time for the one or two guys, some of them that were a little ahead of me, other chaplains, other clergy, friends from the military, and having that cup of coffee maybe once a month, right? And knowing that the next month they're going to reach out and say, let's do it again. Or setting that date before we finish that, you know, that cup to say, when are we going to meet again? That's really mattered to me. And I didn't realize how intentional I had to be about that, and how when you're in on active, you don't have to be intentional because you're just surrounded by people all the time with that. All of a sudden you sit in an office, you close your door, and then you begin to stew and you wonder, you know, does anybody care? Who can I share with? How do I do that? What are the boundaries? I think that's the other big piece in that helpers getting help is military life's all encompassing. So if you break your arm, your employer cares. In fact, they're going to help transport you to get the care you need on, you know, the installation with somebody else. If you have family issues, it spills in. Whereas in the civilian world, it may not be that way. And so to have the intentionality to find the help. And like I said, sometimes, you know, getting the pro help, you know, pay the copay, do what you have to do. But then trusting those people that say, hey, let's go grab a cup of coffee and be willing to open the door to your life. And they begin to open the door to theirs. And it's amazing to see what happens.
Aside from what you're doing at Fort Liberty in Fayetteville, how do you communicate with people through LinkedIn? Are you open to having people reach out to you?
Absolutely. I've been wowed really by the LinkedIn platform. You know, I'm on social media and other platforms. I think what's so great about LinkedIn is it's been a fun place to just see people's insights and journeys and new ideas and courage to try new things. And always open. Love it. I'm always wowed when I get a message from somebody I haven't talked to, you know, maybe in decades, or somebody I didn't know who said, hey, a friend of a friend of a friend, you know, said to maybe I could reach out. And so always willing. And it's fun. I found the new courage to do that with some folks that I've seen and just said, hey, you're doing something I want to do. Can I ask some questions? And I'm always wowed that folks tend to have great humility and openness when you do that. And so I am always open to that.
All right. How do you spell your name for those who are just listening audio only?
Yeah. So I tell everybody, not only was my family of Scottish descent, but, you know, we save a lot of ink as sustainability folks. So my name is Scott, S-C-O-T, Mikosh, M-C-C-O-S-H.
I'm going to wrap up this segment, say goodbye to Scott. Before we do, I always ask people, what's your last alibi? Any last parting goodbyes that you'd like to share?
You know, I always love the phrase, practice the pause. I know that in the military world, life is fast. But I had a commander that said, you know, slow is smooth and smooth is fast. And in transitions, I think sometimes we're so anxious to get wherever it is we think we're supposed to be that we forget to just pause and be thankful for where we are in that moment and realize that, you know, maybe there's a way station along the way that's the next step. It's not everything we've dreamt of, but it's that next step on the way to that greater thing. And so practice the pause.
Practice the pause. Will do. Thank you so much. You're listening to the Military to Civilian Career Transition Power Hour. Our 5+ year veteran is Scott Mikosh. Go find him on LinkedIn. My name is Cheryl Cross. I am honored and pleased to be your host today. We'll be back after this short break.